Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond, here on KLBB Club 1220. Tom Hsu, Master Engineer.
Oh, you know I love it when you say these things.
Well, it does good to me to compliment you.
Well, then just keep it up.
Well, you know, we made it here without a lot of trouble today. This is the first time I can say that I didn't have to run the obstacle course to get here.
You know, that's true. For the last 3 weeks or so, it's been a bit of a challenge.
The weather, God, the state patrol.
Are you blaming God?
just pointing out some people that might have been provided challenge to get here. But you know who posed no challenge today was there is a van who is falling asleep here next to me.
Hey, Barry.
No, I'm just rubbing my eyes. I love your opening music.
Well, do you know where that's from, Barry? Do
no.
you know, recognize the theme?
No.
That was from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
Wow.
Remember John Travolta?
Well, yes, of course.
Well.
I'm not that old.
Well, I think John Travolta's older than you, I think. You haven't heard a lot about John since he had, you know, a couple little media flare-ups a couple years ago. He's kind of staying off the...
Those were a little weird.
A little weird.
Yeah.
Speaking of weird, I pulled up some information on Barry, because I'm still waiting to find some...
Speaking of weird.
Speaking of weird, John Gosling, I live in the woods now. Now, this is not the kind of show where we talk about this kind of stuff. That might be another FM station, but John Gosling now lives in the woods. Remember he was John and Kate plus 18 or whatever
that
thing was?
Oh, that thing, yeah.
Yeah. Gosling was asked if Kim Kardashian and Kanye West should allow their newborn daughter, North, to appear on the reality show Keeping Up with the Kardashians. And surprisingly, he didn't think so. He thinks that the reality TV ruined his life. Well,
I think reality TV ruined my life. That stuff is awful. Oh, my Lord.
I'm trying to remember who John Gosling was.
He had the show. Him and his wife had 8 kids, and they had a show on Discovery Channel.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you been offered to do a reality show yet?
No. I'm so unreal that nobody would want
to. Well, I have an idea. We'll call it Living with Zavan, and then they can just follow you around all day and
good
the
luck.
Zany antics that happen.
As some friend of mine once said, how many people live in that body, Barry?
Yeah, they can always use good camera angles, and then we'll just edit out the good stuff, right?
Okay. I guess.
So, Barry, this is kind of a big deal this year because this is kind of like Susan Lucci getting her Academy Award. I mean, long, long overdue. You are the first repeat guest I've had in Flashback Twin Cities. So you're the David Brenner of this program.
Thank you, sir.
And
I'm very honored.
You are also the first of the 2013 Pavic Museum Broadcast Hall of Fame inductees who we are going to have on the show.
Well, I appreciate it very much.
That are living.
Huh?
That are living.
Oh, who are living. Yeah,
that are living. Yeah. Unfortunately, there are a few of them that are not with us. But
yeah.
I'm reading the Star Tribune here, and this is your biography. Oh, we did have – you know, we had Tom Ryder twice. I'm sorry. You're the second guest we've had twice. I've been corrected.
Well, harumph.
Well, you know, and Tom
deeply upset.
Tom Ryder co-hosted with me. He was the co-host.
Oh, he's
one.
Terrific. Yeah, that's my bro.
We had to
my homie.
Tom co-hosted when we had Dr. Bald Lyons because that was too big of an interview for me to do on my own. Have Tom help me. But Barry, here's your bio in the Star Tribune. Barry Zavan, the peekaboo weatherman, who was among the first in the business to deliver personality with the day's forecast.
Well, I guess that's true.
Very long bio. Last time we had you on, we talked a little bit about your new organization that you're working with for the country of Poland. You were working with them. Polish, it's not a joke, never was. And you've been touring the Midwest and on this new marketing program. You're working with the country of Poland. Let's talk a little bit about that again.
Well, it's it's not to the point where it's super strong yet, but... we just finalized the trademarks, actually today, for Poland is not a joke, never was, and being Polish, not a joke, never was. So coffee cups, baseball caps, aprons, T-shirts, whatever you can think of. And so it's going to take off, I think, fairly soon.
How's it going, by the way? Has it been going well?
No. As a matter of fact.
Well, let's spread a little awareness.
What's the website?
Well, it's www.beingpolish.com.
www.beingpolish.com.
Can you, as an outsider, I don't understand Polish jokes. I don't understand, actually, why Poland is the butt of a joke.
They've been, sadly, the doormat of history in Europe for a long time. I mean, certain countries, which shall be nameless, have walked all over them, and mm-hmm. they're just very happy, happy-go-lucky people, et cetera. And they've had some giants, of course, who have contributed so much to world society, world progress, Paderewski and Chopin and
sure.
Madame Curie and, I mean, so many others. People don't know who were Polish. And then we have a list of 145 very famous people, living or dead, in the show business industry, too, who are of Polish descent. And so it's just sad that they were picked on. And I just thought to myself, I'm only one-eighth Polish, but I just thought, hey, wait a minute, because I got involved with a green energy group over there, and I began to think more about Poland as I got involved. And so I thought, wait a minute, why don't we just say something about this? You know, they're not jokes.
So mm-hmm. are they basically being picked on because they've been picked on in the past?
Just who knows? Kind of, who knows?
It's a deeper question than we can answer here on an hour on radio, I think.
That's right.
But I was in Poland 3 years ago.
That's right. You mentioned
that. I was surprised because when you're here in Minnesota and you think of Poland, you think of World War II. You think of martial law, it was not martial law, but it was under the control of
The Nazis and then the Russians.
The Russians for you know, until 30 years ago.
Yeah.
If not even less than that. And I was surprised how, you know, what a wonderful country it was, and the people were very nice, and they weren't, you know, very welcoming to Americans, and it was really a great experience. It really exceeded my expectations. I thought Poland was going to be very drab and gray mm-hmm. and uninteresting, yeah. but a lot of beautiful art and a lot of beautiful places to go. And
well, Krakow is going to be one of the first cities I visit
mm-hmm.
When I start doing some work over there. So.
That's great. Well, back to Minnesota. Are you going to be doing the weather in Krakow? Are you going to be doing doing?
Yeah. Good luck. Good luck.
Do they have a need for me for a weatherman?
probably not me. But no. One thing we are going to do is 4 major events each season: fall, winter, spring, and summer, honoring Americans of Polish descent who have made it big in the entertainment and political industry and or political arenas, I should say. Zbigniew Brzezinski, of course, who was Jimmy Carter's, you know, advisor, and I mean, there are just so many others. It's the only one who turned us down was Barbara Walters, and I don't know why, because her grandfather was born in a city called Łódź, spelled L-O-D-Z, mm-hmm. Łódź. Good luck.
did Barbara have some health problems this year? I think Barbara might have had some health challenges.
Well, she had health problems, but this isn't going to happen until later this year,
okay.
The first one. So,
well, Barbara, if you're listening, you know, give Barry a call. He'd appreciate it.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, Babs.
You met Barbara before, haven't you?
One time.
How was that?
It was brief.
was it when she was in D.C.?
Yeah, when actually we were at a performance at the Kennedy Center, and she was standing off by herself. And
Harry Reason, or her all in the same row together?
Oh,
you're,
yeah,
you're in the
right.
middle? Okay.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, that was a disaster.
Let's take a little time warp here to 1970, and you came to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You were working in Vegas. You were at a very popular program and weather segment in Las Vegas, which at the time was not a big league market, but it was a growing market.
Yeah,
a lot of celebrities though were there, and people went there for vacation. You came to Minnesota to audition for this job at KSTP TV.
Actually, that's not quite the way it happened. So, if I may tell you,
please.
Okay, the gig in Vegas was wonderful. It was fun. Mm-hmm. I worked for Howard Hughes for 2 years, mm-hmm. and in addition to doing the weather, I was head of some broadcast operations out there for him, as well as promotion and merchandising sales service.
And I apologize, I'm going to have to go on veer off on topics. Was Howard Hughes, was he fun to work for? Did you know him? Was he?
Of course, nobody saw him. But I'll tell you a Hughes story. We did hear him once on a speakerphone, but that was it. But the rest of it was all notes that were passed to us by Bob Mayhew, who was his kind of general in charge of everything.
I apologize. I was hoping you could get a good you were in the room with the FedEx boxes or something.
Well,
but yeah.
But hold on. There's a direct connection with Mr. Hughes. Mr. Hughes knew me very, very well. And here's the story. The first story is I was on a driving trip up to San Francisco, and I got into a dust storm in Modesto, California. And I contracted what they call valley fever, which is 98% fatal.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know I had contracted it, but when I got back to Las Vegas, I actually lived in an apartment right next to Sunrise Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
One Sunday, a friend was over watching TV with me and said, you're burning up. I mean, my face was as red as a beet. And so went into the hospital, and long story short, I was in the hospital for a month. I had valley fever, encephalitis, and meningitis all at the same time. And they kept taking spinal taps and everything, and I literally clinically died the night before my birthday that year, which was 1968. So the next morning they took more spinal taps, and one anyway. All the meningitis cells were gone, this, that, and the other. It's a long story on how I wished my death away, but anyway, when I went to check out, I was working for Hughes at the time, and I said, well, how much do I owe? Oh, no, Mr. Hughes has taken care of everything. And so I said, oh, how wonderful, et cetera. So a couple months later, I quit to go to the ABC station there. Ours was the CBS station. And the orchestra leader at the Frontier Hotel and I were having a Coca-Cola, not the other kind. And
this could have been a much weirder story.
Yes. So anyway, his name was Al Alvarez. And he said, Barry, do you know that Hughes really loved you? I said, what? He said, do you recall getting a phone call asking if you were going to change your style? And I remembered this phone call because it came directly into the control room after one of our newscasts. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't feeling very well that night. And so the person on the other end of the line said, Mr. Zivan, are you changing your style of presentation? And I said, no, I just don't feel very well tonight. So he said, thank you. That's all we wanted to know. We was Howard Hughes having his aide call me. The aide quit. A few weeks later, and he told Alvarez this story that Hughes insisted that he call to find out if I'm changing my style. So it was freaky to know that this man who runs his gigantic empire was a fan. And I actually, along with Peter Mayhew, Bob Mayhew's nephew, we helped Mr. Hughes win several hundred million dollars from the Atomic Energy Commission because we got orders to photograph every single corner of every one of the six hotels prior to an atomic bomb test 100 miles north at Yucca Flats. And so after the test, we did before and after pictures in a nutshell, and it proved there were cracks in the walls. And said, I felt the shaking that morning in our house. And so he won a lot of money from the U.S. government.
Well, there you go.
So there was a connection. Mr. Hughes at least had paid some attention to yours truly.
And who wouldn't have? So someone was paying attention because you got an offer.
That's right, how I got here. I had a talk show as well, a TV talk show in the morning. And Bob Newhart, who I had gotten to know over the years living out there, and with his performing at the Desert Inn, he was a guest one morning. Bob said, you belong in a much bigger market. Mm-hmm. He said, why don't you get a broadcasting magazine and find out if there's a big job out there? So that week I did get a broadcasting magazine, and the ad said, Upper Midwest Television Station wants personality weatherman. Apply to box such and such and send tape. So the tape I sent, of course, was a big reel-to-reel tapes. I thought, I'm going to send the wackiest tape I can find. And so anyway, I did. And a week later, I got a call from Ralph Dolan, who was Stanley Hubbard's lieutenant in charge of getting things done. Mm-hmm. And he said, we want to talk to you. We'll fly you back here to Minneapolis. So I told Newhart that it was Minneapolis. He said, that's a great market, Minneapolis, St. Paul. And he said, that'll be a great stepping stone.
And you'd been in Minneapolis before, but did you realize that you were going to come to this?
That's a great sidebar, because on my way out to my first local radio job in Helena, Montana, in 1957, I stopped in a snowstorm in Anoka at this dumpy little motel. Sorry, Anoka.
Crumb's still there.
And I watched one of the people I was going to replace, who was Johnny Morris.
Right, and he just retired like 2 years ago.
Yeah,
he was doing
in Albuquerque.
News.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, Johnny's a good friend, but. Anyway, and I watched these people, and I thought, oh, my God, this is 1957. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, it'll take you decades to get to that level. And here I was.
14 years later.
So anyway, I got the And Mr. Hubbard said, he said, we did a focus group and you blew everybody away. We really want to hire you, but the money they were offering was only $5,000 more than I was getting in Las Vegas. And I thought, this is the 12th market. Las Vegas is the 2 millionth market.
Right.
And so, anyway, but he said, we want you for a long time, mm-hmm. very, very long time, forever. And we promise you that if things are good, you know, you'll be happy you're here.
Well, Hubbard Broadcasting prides loyalty. They like loyalty.
Yeah.
It's remembered and not forgotten.
That's right.
Loyalty.
Well, I felt badly. The only reason I ever left KSTP, and I quit, I want to emphasize that,
right.
That it was for the money in Washington, D.C., and they almost tripled my money, mm-hmm. and Mr. Hubbard almost matched it. And I thought to myself, after I got there, it was 6 days after I got to D.C., I thought, oh, man, did you make a big mistake.
Well, I want to talk about that in one moment, but I do want to talk about first coming here to Minnesota, because then we'll talk a little bit about that sad departing day when you'd left, because I think that people who talk to me on the website or through the show, they don't know you were here and then you left. They're still a little bit hurt and heartbroken you left, and then you came back and showed up a couple different places. But let's talk about that when you came here in 1971. You did some staff announcing before they got the program.
Yeah, I was the world's highest paid booth announcer.
There you go. you and Ernie Anderson. But before you were able to go on air, very big promotion and publicity, and they brought in a new news anchor in sports, Tom Ryder, bring the whole group in, and you go on, you launch in July of 71, and
July 19th.
Got torn up in the paper the next day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was funny. Well, it was Irv Litovsky was the reporter or the columnist or whoever, and Mr. Hubbard the next day said, don't you pay any attention to these people. You're going to be number one. We're going to be number one. We believe in you, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, Mr. Hubbard and the newspaper columnists never really quite gotten along well together then or now.
Well, really, I mean, it was almost verboten to have the Star Tribune and CCO people talk to us.
Right.
Bud Crayling told me years later, he said, I wish they had let us communicate with each other because we would have had a lot of fun.
Right.
You know, as on a social level. And, boy, in those days, wow. I mean, it's crazy to even hear Star Tribune or see Star Tribune ads on KSTP or whatever, you know.
Even in those days, and our guest here, Barry Zavan, I know that Steve Cannon used to talk about when he came from 1500 to 830, and they'd say, don't talk about TV. TV doesn't exist in the radio world. You can't talk about what happened on Johnny Carson last night because we don't want anyone to know TV exists.
Oh boy, things changed just a little bit.
We don't want to know the newspapers exist if you're in TV, and you don't want to know the TV exists if you're.
And that's the way it really was. I mean, in the old days, the closest anything happened on the networks was if there was a network program, say the Jack Benny Show, and then they'll say, but on another network, such and such, you know.
Their names do not exist. So things got better. You were torn the paper, but you kept doing what you were brought here to do, and pretty soon people started tuning in.
Yeah, well, the first three ratings books went down, down, down.
Never a good sign.
And then, but they made a commitment, and they just knew. Mr. Hubbard Sr. was considered one of the top talent people on the NBC network, really. I mean, for the NBC network, he and a guy named John Royal picked out a lot of talent for NBC radio and a little bit of TV. So Mr. Hubbard knew. I mean, thanks to him. I'm walking down the hall one day in the station, and he's arm in arm with Ginger Rogers. So it's like, you know, he was a giant. He was a giant. And, I mean, I love the man. So anyhow, he believed in us, and it did start to go up. The ratings actually started to go up, and they never stopped going to a 51% share in July of 1974.
Did the Magid Consulting Company work with you?
Well, they were the ones who got me hired.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. People say sometimes, you know, why did Hubbard stick with Magid for so long? I think, well, it worked for a while. I mean, it worked for the first 10, 15 years they worked with them, and one could argue for and against using them since then. But
yeah. Well, it's, you know, I mean, they had their thing, and part of it, I mean, truthfully, to be honest, there was one of the people who was with Magid who would come up and suggest things. And I always told Mr. Hubbard, I said, I know precisely what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Don't mess with me.
Right.
I know the whole bit. I've been practicing this bit for years and years, and I know how to do it. I know it grabs audience. Mm-hmm. So they didn't ever talk to me, the MAGID people. You know, they'd call people in and say, well, I want to do this. And that doesn't mean because I'm some big shot or anything. It was just because if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, don't mess with a hit, right?
Yeah.
What you did bring in, Ron Majors, the program brought in Ron Majors from I'm talking some hot topics today. Ron Majors from California, and things were going well enough, and the ratings were cooking. And
oh, we were way up there.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when Ted O'Brien was let go, and I thought Ted was great, mm-hmm. and still is, but they did what they did, and so in the interim, Stan Turner, KLBB's own Stan Turner.
Do you know Stan Turner?
And my...
I might be aware of him.
Right.
And my dear friend, who I thought was a magnificent broadcaster, he took O'Brien's place. Mm-hmm. And for about 4 months, and guess what? The ratings still kept going up, up, up. When Majors came, the ratings were way ahead of CCO.
Mm-hmm.
So...
You don't mess with a legacy station like CCO without some kind of plot to shake things up.
But anyway, we were on top by the time Ron got here.
Ron got here, and you left maybe about less than a year after Ron Majors got here. And here's the big question. This is the tough question. And the lights are on high, and you're sweating now. So what were you looking for a new job, or what made you leave? Was it just about the money?
It was mostly about the money. Right. Yeah, 94.3% about the money.
That is the most accurate percentage I've ever heard.
I like that.
Say the secret. Why didn't you win
$100? Well, you were doing. I mean, you were a hit, and if you're a hit, you want to market what you're doing, and you go around the earth one time, and
the thing was, and this sounds so uppity or conceit or whatever.
That's right.
I got maybe at least one call a week. For weeks from major markets, from L.A., from Chicago, from New York, everything, CBS and New York call.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved KSTP, and this sounds so corny, but it's really true. I loved that building. I loved those people so much. I was afraid to even say maybe. And so I kept turning people down. Eventually, one of the guys at CBS in New York became my boss in Washington, D.C. His name was Sam Zellman.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, finally there was this one call, and they said, we will triple your salary. I didn't know that this station was consulted by the same people who consulted WCCO. And I bet, and CCO's people probably said, offer them the moon, we want them out of here. And that's the exact truth. So they wined and dined us. My wife and I went down to D.C. on Labor Day weekend that particular mm-hmm. year, and they offered the money.
D.C. is a fun town. D.C. has a lot. I mean, there's the movers and shakers of the world are there.
Yeah.
There's business there. It's a great news town.
Well, my fans were, you know, the president, the vice president, half the senators. Mm-hmm. Ed Muskie shouted down the hall at me once in the Senate office building, I enjoy you, you know. I enjoy you too,
Mr. Hubbard. Stan Hubbard. He doesn't appreciate when people leave. He doesn't.
Well, I don't
like
blame
that.
Him. I don't blame him. And I told him, you know, 6 days after I got there, I literally called back. I said, any chance of doing this? Because the last day I was at KSTP, he said, Barry, you can stay here the rest of your life, and I'll put that in writing. I said, Mr. Hubbard, I never had a lot of money. I want to find out what it's like. And I didn't realize the security factor.
But six days into it, you didn't like it.
Well, no.
What was that when you found out that CCO had been the brains behind it?
I didn't find that out till about a week later.
So tell me this. What when you were in D.C. 6 days later, what made you call Hubbard back and ask if there's any go back?
Because there was just the feeling there that this was not a friendly place.
Right. Right.
And all of a sudden,
this is big market news. And
I mean, it was. There were a lot of egos there. The worse than some of the egos here, and Just
worse than egos even in this room, maybe.
Oh, my God.
I have an enormous ego. You guys, don't even understand.
It's terrible. It's just awful.
Let's take a quick break. We'll talk about Barry's unfortunate move to D.C., but there are some good things you did in D.C. I want to talk about those, too, and then we'll talk about the long journey back to Minnesota and a couple of the long road trip and even brought back Paul Douglas with them when he came back. So we'll come back on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Tom Osmond here with Barry Zavan, the newly inducted member of the Minnesota Broadcasting Hall of Fame 2013 class.
Yes, sir.
Barry, I'm just looking at some more headlines here, and we don't have to talk about these because we run a very clean show here, but Paula Deen loses ham endorsement deal. Paula's had a rough week. Let's see. National Zoo finds missing red panda. Now, this website was up today, Tom, and I've never been on the Today Show website till this was just up here. I think
I don't think I have ever either.
I don't know who here was on this, but I'm just fascinated by all this important news going on in the world. But let's go back to some more important news, Barry. You're in D.C. You realize that maybe this is not the fun loving town that I love, because you were in D.C. Vegas was a small market.
Yes. But
it was a very close market. You knew everyone. You knew the people. You knew the.
And every star on the strip was on my show.
Right.
You know.
And
all
then
the time.
Come to Minneapolis, and at the time it was a smaller market. Our population explodes, but you know the people. People treat the media like celebrities in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Well, plus the fact, the Twin Cities have been the home to so many giants mm-hmm. in the entertainment world. I mean, the Andrews sisters, Bing Crosby's mother being born here in Stillwater. I mean, it's just, and Eddie Albert and Jim Arness and Peter Graves. And I mean, just all these great people. So, this is no hick town.
But then
that's for sure.
Then you're in D.C. and it's like, what did I do?
Well, it was only because of the egos. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were some pretty giant egos there at the station, mm-hmm. that particular station. And then when I found out why they hired me, it just hurt. Mm-hmm. It really hurt. And I don't know, Willard, it's really funny because Willard was opposite me on WRC.
Yeah.
And we became really good friends mm-hmm. thanks to him. I mean, he's a sweet man. And we had dinner every Monday night for 3 years at the same place. Al Roker, we invited one time, and he only came once. We weren't in his league. And so anyway, and then Gordon Barnes, who was the CBS weatherman. But
now, did Willard ever have the Ronald McDonald costume on when you had dinner with him?
No.
Okay, that's unfortunate.
No, I'll tell you about Willard, though, on that Ronald McDonald thing. He invented Ronald McDonald. So when he did it, he told me the story. He said they offered him stock in McDonald's or $2,000. He said, "Give me the money, baby."
Oh, no.
$2,000.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But we still keep in touch.
That's great. So you went from D.C., and then what happened in D.C.? What was the...
Well, truthfully, the ratings went way up. Mm-hmm. There was one guy there who had the highest ratings for weather. His name was Louis Allen. Mm-hmm. And in 6 months, I eclipsed the recognition factor of Willie, of mm-hmm. Louis. So, they were happy with the ratings and stuff, but it was just the fact that I had the length of time in my contract for my weathercasts and stuff, and, all these people were going crazy because of it, and I would relinquish time sometimes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was just the atmosphere. I mean, everything was wonderful except the station. I had a Rolls Royce. I had a house in Potomac, Maryland. Ted Koppel was one of my neighbors. Mm-hmm. Peter Jennings and his wife were at the house a lot. Barry Dunsmore's daughter was our babysitter. I mean, mm-hmm. it just went on and on and on. But, walking into the station, I get a pit in my stomach every day.
Now, I've read a couple articles, and let's validate this for me or not. Were you talks into coming to Channel 9 at one point at this period? Were you working with that station to... Because this is when, before Channel 9 had switched affiliates, and there was some report that you had a deal possibly making more than the main anchor at Channel 9.
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. That never happened.
It's been false reported a couple of times that you were going to come back to Channel 9.
Not true.
Okay.
No, and no. But it's interesting, though. David Letterman, though, didn't know that I was going to D.C. that Labor Day weekend, and he, Jim Gilliland, the sportscaster at that time on Channel 9, Randy Shaver and
Jeff Passold
told me this story.
Yeah.
That Letterman saw me one night,
mm-hmm.
the night before he was going to audition on Channel 9 to become weatherman over there, and called Gilliland up and said, tell him I'm not coming in. I don't want to compete with this guy. I'm going back to Indianapolis. And so anyway, David admitted it in later years.
You drove David out of weather, and look what became of him.
It's been a rough
30 years for him.
No, it's true, though.
So you wandered into Detroit, then. You did Detroit, the weather in Detroit for a while.
Right. Well, 6.5 years. Then the last year in Detroit, I was the satellite news channels, which was ABC's answer to CNN.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me to do weekends.
Cable, and this is a whole new thing.
Yeah,
cable satellite.
And they flew me into New York to. Mm-hmm. We did it in Stamford, Connecticut, mm-hmm. and there was a guy there named Paul Douglas.
Paul Douglas, and Doug
had actually been once on Nightline with Ted Koppel,
mm-hmm.
and once or twice actually because he's good. I mean, mm-hmm. he's very good, and so
and he was good back then. I mean, he was 22, 23 years old.
I know
he was good.
He was just good, mm-hmm. which he is. So anyhow. We got to know each other, and then he told me, he said, I just got a call from a station in Twin Cities. He had an agent in Detroit, actually, who mm-hmm. got him this gig. And he said, do you think I should go? I said, oh. I said, you'll be number one.
He said, I know a little bit about Minneapolis.
Yeah. So he went, and then Tom Ryder, God bless him, when Douglas was coming, before Douglas came, he said Barry would be good to come back too because mm-hmm. he and Douglas know each other now
and so forth.
So that's how I got back here on Channel 11.
Came back to WTCN, which you didn't probably even ever make your dial that wide when you were here the first time because no one really watched Channel 11 when you were here because it was 4 and 5 and
yeah,
89,
four,
but
four,
no,
five,
one,
nine.
No one watched yeah. 11. Let's play some audio of Barry at Channel 11.
Hi, I'm Steve Kufkin. We're all drug ballers from Edina.
Good morning, 11 Country!
Now, from the action center of the Twin Cities, News 11 Sunrise. With John Bachman, Marty Burns-Wolf, Steve Carroll on sports, and Barry Zavan, the weatherman.
Build your spirits to a dance in a building about to be torn down. Lots of entertainment this weekend in the Twin Cities. Entertainment editor Barry Zavan has details.
Cold-blooded disregard for the lives of chimpanzees used for Air Force experiments becomes a heartwarming experience for the actors and the audience in Project X, starring Matthew Broderick.
You good little chimp. Come here.
Broderick's best work.
Yeah, working with chimpanzees. I'm the one on the left.
Other films to fall in love with include Raising Arizona, The Secret of My Success, Blind Date, Tin Men, and Hoosiers. The classic films continue to be Platoon and Lethal Weapon. The classic and Class E stage production of Lerner and Lowe's Camelot begins Tuesday at the Minneapolis Orpheum, starring Richard Harris. Locally based productions worth seeing this weekend include monologist Jim Stoll's Traveling Light at the Hennepin Center for the Arts Little Theater, Beyond Therapy at Chanhassen, How to Improve Your Golf Game at Mixed Blood Theater, and among many more, No Sex Please, We're British at the Old Log. The Minnesota Orchestra, under the baton of Ado DeVart, will present Brahms Piano Concerto No. 2, featuring Emmanuel Axe at the keyboard.
And the Wrecking Ball is the name of the final big band dance at St. Paul's Prom Center tonight at 8, featuring Cab Calloway, Shirley Witherspoon, and the American Classic Jazz Orchestra. The real Wrecking Ball will destroy the Prom Center later this spring, but never all those decades of great memories. That's showbiz. For Sunrise, Barry Zivan, News 11.
What a great weekend of entertainment. Cab Calloway into the Prom Center.
Yeah. that was a jumping joint in those days.
And then the Carlton Celebrity Room, that had everyone.
Yeah, they had everybody.
Bob Hope, Liberace to...
Yeah.
Dolly Parton.
That's where I first met Liberace. Although he had lived in Las Vegas all those years, and I never met him, so I had to wait till I came.
Well, you know, the Liberace Museum, is it the Wayne Newton Museum or the Liberace Museum?
Liberace is going
up for auction now, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that Liberace isn't driving the traffic that it once did.
You need to get in there and try wearing one of his capes before it goes away. See if you can support the weight of all those bedazzled jewels on it.
You're bringing this up. I think the best stuff on television now is MeTV and Antenna TV.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And
far.
Everybody is talking about it. I mean, I'm talking about people on national television. I see some programs during the day sometimes, and they're saying, you know, the best thing is MeTV and Antenna TV.
Well, you know what it is now they've cleaned up these prints of TV that it looks really, really nice. Now, you look, you take an old Bonanza or an old black
and
white.
I wish they'd bring back my show, Mr. Peepers.
Mr. Peepers?
Yeah.
Now, was that on film or kinescope, though?
Kinescope.
Well, see, they'll never be able to clean a kinescope because it's a recording off a film projector, so they won't be able to. They can't do the same kind of cleaning, but we could always try.
Well, it could be dirty. All that was a clean show.
You know? Vintage.
Yeah, vintage.
Yeah. As long as the tag is a dirty show.
It's a dirty show.
Do you have a copy of that with you on the show?
There are several. On Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you selling them personally?
Pardon me?
Are you selling them on your...
Yeah, no. Okay, right. Yeah, on the street. Okay. Just the corner of Hennepin and 12th. No. They do have... They have the... Both... I've seen two or three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're available. I can see myself.
Well, we'll look into that. You come back to Channel 11, and Channel 11 was a fourth place news operation, and then it kind of grew some steam.
Yeah, and when I joined, to be honest, and I want to be because...
this is an honesty here.
Yeah. 1 month after I got there, their ratings went up 6 points, mm-hmm. six rating points.
Yep.
And one of the people there said, well, it's just the curiosity factor. They never lost the 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
And it really made me mad.
Right.
Why don't you give some credit that maybe somebody still likes me mm-hmm. in this burg? And they're so reluctant, some of these, quote, big shots mm-hmm. in the business to actually say, hey, wow, yay.
we have a mutual friend, Joan Steffend.
Yes,
and we had
love Joan.
We had her here. You worked with her for a long time. We had her here a few weeks ago, and she said they just told her some horrible things. They thought her looks and about her delivery, but she said they couldn't fire me because I had number one. You know, we were number one on weekends, and they said you.
Didn't you, they say she couldn't read the news because she had too much of a bedroom voice?
She had a bedroom voice, and she said. I'm going to paraphrase. I think the Joan's beautiful, but they said you don't have a face for TV. But you know, it was, cause you were in here, Tom, when she said that to us.
Yeah,
right?
It still wrecks me. She was so fun to
have
on.
She was the classiest act on television.
So my point is, I just think of any other workplace, that you wouldn't be able to say those kind of things to women or men or anyone, and it's okay.
Well, it's very. I mean, you know, and the big word in that business, sadly, is ego.
Mm-hmm.
And power, and there are so many people who have ego and power, you don't even remember their names now. And it's really funny because John Bachman, God bless him, he was my floor director at KSTP mm-hmm. in the 1970s, and then he became anchor, and then he became the biggest in the state of Iowa on
mm-hmm. WHO. Just retired this year, actually.
Yep.
Just retired after the election. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about what happened at Channel 11 and the good and in between, and we'll talk about what you've been up to the last few years and on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here with Barry Zavan, the weatherman, entrepreneur, radio co-host.
We'll work for food.
We'll work for food. Well, we all will.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we can go back by the dumpsters by McDonald's after later today. We can
probably
find some.
Don't you be raiding my territory.
No, that's right. That's right. So, Barry, you're at Channel 11, which seemed like a good thing to do. And how did that go? How did that go? You were there for four years.
The first... two or three months were terrific, mm-hmm. and then the, quote, new team came in,
right,
and it was different.
Right.
So...
new ownership, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, new ownership.
So I just, I had to make a buck. I mean, you do what you have to do to survive. So then they made me entertainment editor in addition to Weekend Weather. And I enjoyed that. But, I mean, some of my reviews, in fact, because of it, although I had met him many years earlier with him and his wife and Mira, Jerry Stiller, and we became like brother and brother.
Sure, sure.
All those years, and still. I just got a note from Jerry 2 days ago. And we talk on the phone maybe once every couple of weeks and so forth, and just wonderful. And because I gave him a super review in Guys and Dolls and the Guthrie, and he played Nathan Detroit. So anyway, and that's how we got to really get together. So there were some really good times. Channel 11 had me do a lot of the things now that Rusty Gatenby's doing. You know, thanks to Nimir Figur, I was out on the West Coast and the East Coast every weekend reviewing film and doing these interviews. And then then we did some specials about famous Minnesotans who, you know, were who they were. And it just, you know, it was fine. But I tried actually to show Joe Franzgrote, who's dead now, but he, I tried to show him. They renewed me for 1 year. I had a 3 year and then a 1 year. And the 1 year is when, that's the death knell. I'm so naive. You know, I thought, oh, good, another year. Really? So anyway, I wanted to show him some of my history, and he wouldn't even look at the book. He said, oh, no, no. He says, you fished this hole now, and it's time to whatever. And it's so insulting. So I thought, okay, fine. So, you know, you just, you really, this is a business. Jack Valenti became a really good friend when I lived in D.C., and he was the head of the Motion Picture Association of America. But his daughter, Courtney, is head of production at Warner Brothers. And I remember Jack, I was at a little conclave with him when he was speaking, and some girl said, well, what about getting into the television or acting business? He said, well, if you like the word no, if you like to be insulted, if you like to be rejected, then, or not, you know, put on ignore, then you should go into that.
I think it's kind of like being, you know, being a professional athlete, and you're in your prime, or you're doing what you're doing, you have fans adoring you, and for whatever reason, a bust knee or you know, something happens, and then it's all done.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of time to be able to reinvent yourself into what, you know, what are you going to do next? And unfortunately, our passions for what we want to do sometimes don't always match with what the, you know, what's marketable. Right. And right now, the broadcasting, you know, world, I mean, we're lucky to have a great local ownership here at KLBB, but, you know, the corporate broadcasting world, whether it be Gannett or CBS, I mean, Paul Douglas, our good friend, I mean, he was without a job years back. He was doing three nights a week weather for 30 years, and it's all done.
Yeah. Well, he, you know, I mean, thank goodness for Paul. I mean, he's very inventive and creative and smart, and he's built an empire. But on KSTP, and psychologically, and of course I should go to a shrink about this, but anytime I walk into that building, I think I still work there.
Just keep working. Try working. Just keep
feeling good. I really do. I think I'm just on about a 38-year hiatus.
Well, you know, go in the makeup chair, and just it's like the old Office Space joke. You know, this guy's been working here, for 15 years. We fired him 15 years ago, but he still comes to work, so we keep letting him work.
Through a paycheck here, he just keeps on showing up. He doesn't know he's gone.
But no, it's really true. I mean, there and that building is so historic. It's absolutely, to me, that's the best in the business.
And it's part of this, and part of what you did at KSUP, and part of what you did at 11, and you've done some radio. You did some work at, what do they used to call it, Channel 23? It was KMGT at one point, or KTMA.
KTMA.
Yeah. You know, you've done so many great things, and that's why, you're part of this inductee class of the 2013 Broadcast Hall of Fame. And
We're
very proud to have you adopt not a native Minnesotan, but you've been here.
I've lived here longer than any place in my life, 35 years now.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you're part of Minnesota, and hopefully Minnesota's part of you.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's been very, very wonderful to me. But as I say, you know, every time I walk into that KSTP building, I think, oh, yeah, I'm just on a little
no, the security guards don't pull you out now, do they?
No,
okay.
No.
All right, good.
it's been terrific, and as you know, I also blog and do some webcasts for the Star.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit
for the Star Tribune, and they let me say what I want. I mean, within reason, obviously, but. One of the rants, I mean, I call it a senior moment.
But rants, we'll call them here, okay.
A senior rant. But I'll be 76 on August 5th.
August 5th, yeah.
And, you know, first of all, I don't think I sound 76, whatever you're supposed to sound like when you're 76. My brain is of a four-year-old. And, you know, it just irritates me that people who are senior citizens, a lot of them still are very productive and can be very productive, and they're not used at all. And this isn't a pitch for me, but it's a pitch for anybody who, you know, we treat our senior citizens in this country like garbage. And every other society doesn't. The Asians especially, and, you know, other cultures. So if you still have it, you know, I'm sure they're afraid that somebody say my age is going to drop dead in the middle of a sentence. You know, whoops, here I go. But anyway,
And you haven't collapsed during a blog yet, have you? You haven't collapsed during a video?
No,
okay, good, no. Good. Just want to clarify that.
I just get stronger and angrier.
Okay.
But it's just there are so many people walking out there who, you know, can still do the job. I'm not just talking about broadcasting. I'm just everything. And something's got to happen. Something's got to happen, and the quality of the work they do, I mean, it's based on years and years of experience.
Well, people are living longer, so to call someone a senior citizen now at age, what, 55, is that when you're a senior now?
I mean, supposedly.
Yeah. That's a lot of life as a senior. You spend half your life as a senior if you're living to be 100 years old.
That's right. Well, I'm planning on it. There was a palm reader. As you know, I also understudied my old friends, actually childhood friends, Dick Van Patten and Frank Gorshin and the Sunshine Boys for a year. And so we were playing Phoenix one or two nights, and I saw a palm reader sign. I was driving down the street, and this palm reader said, "Oh, you're going to live till you're 96." And she said something, probably very interesting. She said, "You know, people really like you." Now, I never told her what I did. She said, "People really like you, but the people with whom you work are very jealous of you." They don't really want you to succeed. They don't not like you, but they don't want you to succeed. And I thought, wow. So it kind of, and I'm not playing violin here, but it actually has been the truth.
Well, if we have a scientist of that nature saying this, but no, it's no. I sometimes when you read that, it's like
they resent your success.
Correct.
Resent your success.
Right,
to me, that's horrible. I am so happy with Joan Rivers, and I reconnected when she was here a few weeks ago. I knew Joan when she was pregnant with Melissa, and she used to come in the station a lot, and we got along a lot. We reminisced about the old days, and, you know, she said...
How old's Joan?
Joan is 80-something.
Wow.
Yeah, 80. She just turned 80. And so, anyway, reminisced about the old days, and she said, you know, I hate it. She said, because... It's not, I mean, Las Vegas was a friendly little town then. And she said, I just hate the fact that people don't realize the depth and the richness of this business now.
And Joan knows about a little bit of rejection and no, and about having it all and then it's gone. But she's look what she's done. She's rebuilt it all.
Oh, bless her heart.
But Barry, you know, it's great. You know, check out StarTribune.com and look at Barry's blog posts. They're really kind of fun. And Barry has a lot of good anecdotes and... it makes us appreciate those senior moments even more. Barry, I'm glad you were here for our second guest on Flash by Twin Cities. We'll have to do it maybe every few weeks. Days if we have to.
I would love it. Thank you.
This is Flash by Twin Cities on KLEV Club 1220. Tom Osmond. We'll be back next week.